Hi, everybody. It's Andy here, and we've got Rich, Embers, and Esther. And Esther, it's your first time. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
And Esther is the Afrohumanist. She's got her own YouTube channel talking about her journey out of religion. So if you get a chance, go and pop over to that.
We'll put
the link below. We've all got cups of tea, except Esther's got water. Because you want a health kick?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And I'll just say to everybody that I've got a cup this morning, which is wonderful wife. So,
well, no judgments here.
No judgments there. Anyway, so today we're going to be talking about leaving religion, which can be pretty painful for a lot of people. And Esther, you're going to talk a little bit about your sort of journey out of religion, but we're also going to sort of talk a little bit about some of the people we know, because as Rich said just before we come onto the podcast today, that most of us here, I mean myself, Rich and Embers, are not people who have actually had to leave specifically a religion. I mean, I was born into C of E, but it was never very serious, and I just stopped going to church, and no one said anything, you know. So from that point of view, I'm very lucky. But I know people who have left religions and found it really, really problematic on two paths, really, because first off is the disbelief of a God and that existential sort of process you have to go through, and that could be really painful. I've spoken to a few people who have been down that path where they've lost their belief, and really it's very, very difficult for the human mind to comprehend that change over from non-belief or from belief to non-belief. But it's also leaving religion, it also affects your friends, family, and everything else, you know. If you've built up that within your life, and the people you know, the people who go to church and all that sort of stuff, it really can be very, very, very problematic. And so we're going to be talking a little bit about that. So who fancies starting this up?
Well, I'll go first if I may.
Yep, no worries.
Just to set a bit of my own background. I was christened in a Methodist church. Hang on, everybody else, because Esther hasn't heard this before. Everybody else has heard this before. Christened in a Methodist church. Never went to church deliberately, apart from being sent to Sunday school. But in those days, it was more like it was a youth club, really, rather than a church thing. And I can't even remember getting any particular religious input for that. I was expelled when I was 7 from Sunday school, and we're not going to go into that today because there's a bit of a backstory with that one coming up.
We've still got to prize that story out of you, though.
Yeah, it's coming. Yeah, it'll get
there. Why did you get expelled? I'm desperate to know.
I really don't even want to say it now. I know I've got to do it eventually, but I'll have to work up to it. Excuse me, digressing, Esther.
It's okay.
I never had any religious input. My parents weren't religious. None of my family were religious. The only time I ever went to church was for weddings and funerals, and that was it. I've never been religious, so I've never been able to know what it's like to have to leave it, because I've never had a belief at all. So I suppose in some ways I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage, although that's probably not the right word, in a conversation about leaving religion, because I don't have that sort of experience, which is why, you know, I'm very looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Same here. It's an opportunity to learn.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. And listen, I think it's meeting people like yourselves who were never in a religion that actually helped me out, that helped me make sense of my existence after leaving religion. Because when you've grown up knowing nothing but a religion, and you come away from that, how do you live life? How do you, you know, nothing makes sense anymore. Everything just, yeah, I tell people it felt like a loss of identity. I felt like I lost who I was. But it was looking at people who have never been religious at all. And these people are living life. They're not only living life, they're enjoying life. I mean, when we started the conversation, one of you was talking about your marking papers, somebody, you know, you were supposed to be somewhere, you're supposed to be traveled somewhere. There's just nothing. You haven't got the God factor, but you're living life. You're living your existence. So you might think you've got nothing to add to the conversation, but you do, because people ask me, how are you good without God? Where are you getting your morals from these days now that you haven't got God? And when I see people like yourselves, I think, yes, these are the kind of people I want to hang out around, you know.
and it's one of those things, because that's the way you were brought up and that's the way you've always lived life. You know, you said, you know, when you were leaving, you didn't understand how we were able to live life without God. Yeah. And those of us that always have, we look at people who are in religions and we ask the same question of them. You know, how do you live with this with your, when your mind is tied up with this, these ideas, which are very clearly not true. You know, and actually I think, you know, make living harder. And we actually ask pretty much the same question. And I think it's because that is what we grew up with and what we know, you know. It's and we don't understand the other perspective.
I think at this point I might as well just tell you a little bit of how you know, I got to where I am today.
Oh, yes please.
That I boldly call myself an atheist. I'm an atheist. And, you know.
Well, you're in the right place.
Hey, that's it. You know, I was born into, my mom and dad were Christians. They were religious people. I didn't know any different. I didn't know any other way to live life. And over in Africa, religion is such a huge part of the culture. Religion, you're either Muslim or you're Christian. There are no, if anything in between, they think you're a devil worshipper or you're worship the gods of, you know, all, you know, they're just crazy ideas about unbelievers. I didn't know what it was to be an atheist. I had no clue what that was. It was not a thing. It was, you know, just never introduced to me. I always went to church. I always had the belief in God. And my belief in God did not come because it was something that I investigated or I tried to find out. No, my belief in God came because as a young child, I was taken to church all the time, in a week, sometimes three times a week, four times a week. We would go to church. We never had, the church I went to, they taught holiness. You had to live your life being holy. And as part of your holiness, you had to give up your earthly desires, earthly pleasures. Very strict rules. We were not allowed to have a television. You were advised to get rid of your television because your television would, you know, that's the way the devil could come into the family through the television. You were not allowed to, women were not allowed to wear trousers. You always had to wear long gowns that covered your body up. You couldn't have your hair out. You couldn't have makeup. You couldn't have earrings. You couldn't have, the rules were just so many. And I grew up this way. I grew up believing that, you know, never really questioning, just going along. And so I came to the UK nearly 20 years ago. When I came to the UK, I was told that here in the UK, they're too liberal. they're too relaxed with their religion. They're not so much focused on holiness. And if I need to go to a church, I should look for an African-based church because they're more spiritual. They're more in tune with God because the English people are too relaxed. They're as close to the devil as can be. I mean, so when I came to the UK, I carried on going to an African kind of church. When I stepped foot into a church of England, that was when my journey to deconversion started. I stepped foot into Church of England. It was lovely. It was absolutely lovely. There was nobody telling me what I need to do and what I don't, you know, shouldn't do. I go to church because I want to go to church, not because there was someone telling me if you don't come to church, God was going to be unhappy with me and God was going to be angry. And, you know, there was all that pressure was taken off. I loved how relaxed these were Christians, but they were so relaxed with their religion. How can these people call themselves Christians? And where I was coming from, they call themselves Christians too. How is that even possible? So anyway, I carried on going. I did the first year of what they call, I can't remember the name of the course. I did the first year, you know, like what they call the Alpha course. The Alpha, it was something similar to the Alpha course. I did the first year of that. Second year, I did the Pathways to Ministry, right? And my path to ministry was set. I was making my way in the Church of England to becoming a priest. But it looks like the more I studied, the more I opened the Bible, the more I read, the more I, you know, went further. I wasn't a Sunday Christian anymore. I was, you know, getting right deep into the theology and trying to understand where did this come from? How did Christianity begin? Then the holes started. I started to notice things just weren't adding up. So I was a curious person. I would go to the priest and ask questions. The very first question I asked was the question of hell. I was tormented as a child about hell. I was shown videos, and you know, we didn't have movies, movie nights as young kids. We would be taken to church, we'd be shown movies of the burning hell, Pilgrim's Progress, and you know, that was my childhood. I was denied the things that children had because we were taught that you had to live a holy life. So hell was a huge concept. And I was terrified. There was a period in my life where I suffered really bad insomnia because I would ask myself, if I go to sleep tonight, what are the chances I would wake up in the morning? And am I good enough for God? What if I died in my sleep? Would I go to heaven or will I go to hell? And I just would not sleep because I was afraid that I would die in my sleep and I would go to hell because I wasn't good enough. So when I asked the priest what he thought about hell, and he said to me he didn't believe in hell. I said, "You don't believe in hell?" He said, "No, he does not believe that God would create a place like that." And here I was, all my life tormented by the concept of hell because I thought that every Christian believed in hell. So I carried on the questions. Someone mentioned to me that you do realize that Jesus was not a white man. He was not Caucasian. I said, "That's a lie. we were taught, we were shown pictures of Jesus, and Jesus was, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes, you know, that's what I knew Jesus as, the white figure. I, you know, when I close my eyes to pray, I see a white big God up there, you know. I went back to the priest to go and ask, what did he think about Jesus's ethnicity? And the priest looks me in the face and tells me, what that person told you is correct. Jesus was not a white man. He said to me, I think Jesus was a black Rastafarian. I said, what? So the more I asked these questions, I realized everything that I was taught as a child and growing up was not universal. It was different everywhere you go. So the priest said to me, I think he could see at this point that I was, you know, just everything was falling apart. Because I would go to them and say, I'm struggling. You know, I grew up believing this. You're telling me something different. And when I do my investigations, I'm leaning this way. So who is right? Could it be these people? Could it be, which one of them is right? And then when he said Jesus was not a white man, in fact, he might have been a black Rastafarian. And I felt like, why did they come over to Africa and tell us in Africa that he was white? The priest said, to be honest, we're not sure exactly what he looked like. So don't bother too much about his ethnicity. You know, let's focus on what Jesus came to do. Let that be our focus. What was Jesus's mission on earth? So he said, you know, just go back and think about Jesus. Don't worry too much about what he looked like, color of his skin. So I went away and I started asking myself, if they could lie about his ethnicity, what else could they be lying about? If they could tell these little lies here and there, what else are they hiding? What else doesn't make sense? And so I started my personal investigation. I started asking questions. I'd go online, started watching debates between theists and atheists, right? And the more I watch these things, the more I realize it's not adding up. It's not adding up at all. The final nail in the coffin, the priest said, go back and just think about what Jesus came to do. So I you know, started asking, what did Jesus come to do? What was his mission? You know, Christianity is all about Jesus. What did Jesus come to do? And you know, I broke the story down to the basics. I didn't need theology. I didn't need to be a scholar. I didn't need to be this big professor. I just look at the Bible and, you know, read what the Bible tells me about Jesus and see if I can make sense. And I look at the story and I think, so two people ate an apple thousands of years ago, and humanity is flawed because two people ate an apple, right? Okay. Now, thousands of years later, this all-knowing God, all-powerful God, decides to bring up a master plan, and in his grand master plan, decides to impregnate a virgin with his baby, and his baby comes along, performs only 37 miracles, and somehow this loving God needs his son to die, to be killed in such a horrible, barbaric manner in order to make humans right with himself. I started asking, but Jesus didn't need to die. He didn't need to. God could have just done, waved his, just, you know, a flick of the finger, and everybody's saved.
But and now, notwithstanding the fact that he came back a day and a half later.
He did. That was, I saw a meme somewhere saying Jesus only took a vacation.
Yeah, he had a bad weekend for you.
He only went away for a weekend and came back. That wasn't a sacrifice. You know, I've had Christians tell me it was the ultimate sacrifice. What's ultimate about you dying and coming back? You know, there's nothing special. And to think that there are other religions who have similar stories like the Jesus story, you know, and for me, I just, the question was, did Jesus need to die? And the answer is no. Nobody had to shed an iota of blood to save humanity. Because when you think about it, why blood needed to be shed was because two people ate a fruit. It doesn't make sense.
Well, this is the thing about these sort of stories. We know that a lot of these type of stories, death and resurrection is symbolic, you know. And so Jesus had to do that to be symbolically divine. So, and we know these sort of things. And as you say, Esther, you know, on the face of it, it's a bit of a bonkers story. I mean, you can lace, you know, theology all the way through it, and, you know, you can make that story whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think trying to lace theology through it is an attempt to deflect away from how bonkers it is.
Yeah, and it's there to give meaning, some sort of symbolic meaning to the story. But on the face of it, as you say, it's sort of bonkers. I mean, there's a couple of things I just wanted to quickly sort of ask you after that. We did something a little while ago. We did a podcast a little while ago, and I think we're going to sort of revisit it, I guess, about morals and about, you know, you said, you know, after you leave God's garden, you know, after you sort of, you know, you've left God,
God's empire,
this is what people ask you, where'd you get morals from? Can I ask you one question? Do you think your morals have changed since you've stopped being religious?
No, my morals haven't changed. In fact, I realize now that my morals did not come from religion. A reason why I say this is I've always been pro-LGBTQ, even when I was a Christian. I knew I was going against what the religion was teaching. But at that time, I felt like, you know, if we're humans, you know, and we call ourselves, we say we are accepting of people, however they identify sexually, whatever sex they're having or not having, should not even be a thing. We shouldn't even, you know, people should be free to express themselves however they wish. Even as a Christian, I struggled with the Old Testament. I would avoid the Old Testament if I had to. I would gravitate towards the New Testament because I couldn't imagine that the God I worship was that monster in the Old Testament. So I would avoid it. So when I came away from religion, I realized that my morals weren't even grounded in religion. Because nothing has changed. Absolutely nothing has changed about me. I'm still the same person. It's just that I lost the God belief. It's gone. But I'm not out there stealing people's stuff. Because people have stolen from me. I know how I felt when, you know, I had something taken from me. I felt really, it was a really bad, really horrible experience to lose something so precious to me. And the last thing I want to do is to do that to somebody else, you know, to be the cause of someone else's pain. I wouldn't want to do that, not at all. So,
but see, this is one of the things that, a lot of people who are religious say. They say that, you know, once you leave religion or once you stop believing in God, you have no moral guidance. When we spoke about this last time, we spoke about this concept of morality and where people get their morals from. And what we was talking about was you get morals from, you know, your family, the culture you live in, and all those sort of things.
Yeah. It's basic human empathy.
It's human empathy. You know, so what you're saying is that when you lost your belief in God, you didn't go out and murder someone, because why wouldn't you not do that? You know, you didn't go out and murder someone. You didn't go out and steal, kill.
I have to say, I still think that response from the religious is still one of the most ridiculous things that they say.
But it's sad, Rich. It's so sad that they think that atheists, and I think why they do it is to portray atheism. Or just the lack of belief in God, whether you label yourself as an atheist or not. But, you know, as soon as you move out of that path of God, then this is what you're going to be. And again, it's like it's a threat.
And it's an inbuilt self-defense mechanism of the religion as well.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. And someone said something to me recently. They said that religious people are jealous. They were saying it as a joke kind of thing, but I could understand what they were trying to say, that religious people are jealous of the fact that they have to live under these guidelines and these rules and these, you know, but that because we haven't got those set of rules, we can do whatever we like, we can, you know, live however we want, we're not under some kind of we're not under the guide of this supreme being. You know, they're jealous of that. They wish they can have that, but they know they can't, because if they identify as believers, they have to live under those rules, even though they break those rules every single time. The religious people break their own their moral codes all the time. I mean, look at in the news. Look at the priests. The Catholic Church only a few days ago learning about abuse and children, you know.
Was it 350,000 children abused in France since 1950?
I know. And
that's just an estimate.
And that's just an estimate, and that's just one country.
It's probably more.
I know.
Yeah, I think this is the other thing that you know, we talk about, you know, Christianity as the sort of religion of tolerance and love, you know, God is love. And you see things like that. And I put a post up on Facebook about that. I did I put a video up and put a post up. And it does sort of, there's such a disconnect in here. There's such a disconnect between what people say and what people of religion can do. And I think the evil thing of that was, you know, predators and paedophiles will be predators and paedophiles, whatever institution they're in, whatever they find their home in. And religion is one of them, you know, priesthood is one of them. And not all, obviously, all priests are paedophiles or predators, you know, the majority of them are not, they're good people, or they, you know, they believe they're good people doing good things. But what I think the evil thing of that is the complicity and the cover up of the actual church. It's the church. It's the institution that covered up those things, which is evil. I mean, that is, and again, it's not just those predators or those paedophiles that you got to look at. It's the church that supports them, that hides them, that covers up for them.
And not only that, you know, the Catholic Church is still the largest Christian denomination in the world. And it's still the largest Christian denomination in the world. And people still go. They know of all these things that have happened. But people still attend. People still give money. And they still believe in it. Because, I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine, a former colleague, who is one of the nicest guys you're ever likely to meet in the world. Really top guy. Really kind. Really generous. Helped me out immensely in my own career. But he's still a devout Catholic. And I asked him, you know, why do you still believe in the Catholic Church? He said, because I believe in the Church itself. I believe in the Church's teachings. I believe in the Church's doctrines. I believe that the Catholic Church is the Church that was created by God through Peter and all of the popes down the line. Humans are humans. Humans can be terrible people. And even humans who are in the Church have been horrible people. And he doesn't deny that. But he says, the teachings of the Church still tell me that the Catholic Church is still the true Church.
Covering and, up all this yeah, stuff.
And even where well, he said, well, what about the covering up? He said, it's not the Church covering it up. It's the people within the Church who are covering it up.
See, I think that's funny.
It's funny you would say that, because when I was growing up, I went to what you would call Pentecostal church. Presbyterian church to start with, then the Pentecostal setting. They believe that the Catholic Church is the devil's church. They don't pray with the rosary. They don't pray through Mary. The fact that the Catholic Church pray through another human being, when the Catholics say, Hail Mary, Mother of God, pray for us. They're like, what? You ask another human being to pray for you? She was just favored to be the mother of Jesus. Nothing spectacular. Nothing, you know, there's nothing special about her, and nobody should be praying through Mary. So the fact that the Catholic Church do that, that's it. That nullifies everything that the Catholic Church have to say. And we were taught that the Pope, the Catholic Church was not just the devil's church, but it was also, the Pope was the Antichrist. And when the end of the world will arise, that the Pope is going to, you know, come out of his shell and he will reveal himself as the... So it's interesting that you would say that about that gentleman. And to think, he calls himself a Christian. Yes. My version of Christianity call themselves Christians. You know, you can't make sense. Where do you go with all these different beliefs?
Well, and that's the thing. And that is one of the... I mean, going back to our original topic of why people leave, you know, it is these... It's some of these inconsistencies. I mean, for you, it started off, as you say, it started off with the ethnicity of Jesus.
Oh,
you know,
yes. And that was a huge thing for me.
Yeah, and you started studying and looking into it. Now, I've heard so many people hear about so many people who lost their religion whilst they were studying to become priests, because they were studying it, they were studying the origins, they were studying the Bible, and all of a sudden, these inconsistencies, these contradictions, suddenly became really, really apparent. And they split them apart. It absolutely split them apart. And you will still hear certainly from some of the more fundamentalist sects of Christianity, they refuse point blank to say that there are any contradictions. They refuse to acknowledge point blank those contradictions, even when you point them out to them. They'll refuse to believe it. I've even heard stories of a passage of the Bible which was frankly disgusting, and found by a child in the Bible. It's not suitable for children, that book. It really isn't.
Went to their
parents, who was a fundamentalist, and said, but this chapter and verse says this, and the mother wouldn't even acknowledge that chapter and verse existed even though the kid had the book in her hands and was pointing to the page.
You know something? That child, you know, this is a thing. I do what I do, going on YouTube and speaking and all these things, because I'm a firm believer that children and religion, we need to be careful what we're teaching children, because like it or not, it stays with them. That child, that experience with his mom not being able to answer that simple question, trust me, it will stay with that child. And at some point in their life, they will want to know why. And if they dare to go down that rabbit hole, it could lead to their deconversion. Because once you start asking, it's like when you're deconverting or coming away or just questioning, just, you know, wanting to know, how did this religion start? When you start those questions, when you start one question, another one comes. And another, before you know it, you know, the fact that there's so many unanswered questions is enough for people to say, you know, hands up. Until I'm able to answer these questions, I you know, I'm going to give this religion a little break.
I mean, that's the problem with a lot of religious people who blindly adhere to their religious beliefs. Now, the thousands and thousands and thousands of different religious denominations, but they all say, we don't believe the same as you, but we are right. And they all say that. Now, it's the same as trying to speak to somebody who just sticks their fingers in their ears and goes, no, I can't hear you. As soon as they admit that something that you're pointing out is blatantly wrong, everything falls to bits, which is why they just do the equivalent of sticking their fingers in their ears. Because as soon as they admit that, they can see that what they believe on stands on nothing.
And the fact that anybody can grab a hold of the Bible and interpret the Bible however they see fit. If I need the scripture to, if today I'm thinking about pain, right? I can just open the Bible and find something that talks about pain. If I'm a thief and, you know, and I need God to forgive me, I can just open the Bible and find something. Anybody can interpret the Bible however they see. Criminals can do the same.
Yeah.
Anyone can. So, you know, you've got a book, an ancient book, that needs updating, that needs an overhaul. And yet...
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
Oh, but it's,
Sorry, go on, yeah, Rich.
But it's the ultimate unchanging word, really. Which version?
Yeah, exactly.
Which version of the Bible are you using, exactly. You know?
Oh, apparently the Bible is inspired by God, right? It's inspired. Now, the question is, what does inspiration from God, what does that look like? How do we know what is inspired by, how do we know what an inspiration from God looks like?
Well, and I've read the book of Revelation. It looks like it's somebody who was inspired by a mushroom trip.
Yeah. I was going to the book of Revelation, because they tell you, because, you know, you must realize that Christianity is a doomsday organization.
It's a death cult.
They're expecting the world to end at some point.
And looking forward to the day the world ends.
Exactly. So, and all this they get from the book of Revelation, right? Now, when I started making my way and trying to make sense, I went, you know, the book of Revelation. Who wrote the book of Revelation? That was the first question. And my findings, nobody is sure who wrote the book. They think it is someone named John, right? They assume it was a John. Not the same John that wrote the book of John in the Gospels. Not the same. It's not the same.
Because we don't know who wrote that either.
It's a different John. And quote unquote, this man who wrote the book of Revelation was alone on an island.
for a very long time, it sounds for like.
I was just thinking in my head, just thinking, okay, just imagine someone goes off to an island. There's nobody there with him. Nobody to check out what he's doing there, right? Nobody to verify anything he's saying. Someone comes along and tells you he's had a vision of a monster with seven heads, and you all believe him?
I think at the moment the general scholarly consensus is that it is an allegory about the end of the Roman Empire. At the end of the Roman Empire, the beast with seven heads is Rome, you know, the city that stands on seven hills. But again, we could be making that up as well.
There's so many allegories in the Bible. Yeah. Look at what's his name? Apostle Paul. Mm. There's a part in the Bible where Apostle Paul said, you know, some of the stories in the Old Testament are allegories. He was telling, because Paul was in the habit of writing letters to different churches.
And we also know that half of those letters he didn't actually write.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah.
Because I call Christianity the gospel according to Paul.
Mm. Yeah. So yeah. If the scholarly consensus is about half of Paul's letters he didn't even write.
Really?
And the ones that he didn't write happen to be the ones that are the most awful. So the really, really misogynist, sexist ones, we actually don't think that Paul actually wrote those. If you ever get the chance, start reading some of the writings of a guy called Bart Ehrman. Yeah, he's covered that quite a lot.
I follow him on YouTube.
Yeah. He's done some excellent work. But again, all Bart has done is actually publish books talking about the scholarly consensus. Hmm. And, you know, the vast majority of rank-and-file believers don't know this because they're not told it.
How many
priests out there who have gone through formal biblical and theological education who have been taught these things, there's no way they can really believe them. There's no way, because they're the holes in the story, they're contradictions, and they know them, but they don't tell their parishioners.
One of the things that I'm talking a little bit about Revelation, I was reading a little bit about this the other day. And we don't know who wrote it, but they think it's like John of Patmos or whatever.
Yeah, John of Patmos.
All these sort of things.
Patmos, of course, well known for its mushrooms.
Yes, exactly. Well, it must have been.
Someone said he must have been on some shrooms.
Yes, on shrooms. Absolutely, without doubt. The question I wanted to just sort of ask you, Esther, just before we sort of wrap this up, because this has got flown by. It's flown by today. One of the things is when you, not talking about the existential crisis that you had from believing to not believing, but how did it affect your friends and your family and things like that? What was there problems in that area as well when you left?
Okay, so I tell people that if I was living in Nigeria, there's no way I'll be an atheist today. I can boldly say I'm an atheist because I live in a country where nothing will happen to me as a result. Now, I'm fairly independent. I'm not dependent on any family member for anything. Before I could summon the courage to boldly deconvert, I made sure I was in a good place so that the opinions of family members, friends, or anyone will not make any difference. I was strategic in doing so. Family members have been taken aback. Because like I said, I did not know what an atheist was. they're still trying to understand, still trying to figure out. A friend told me that they're praying for me because I'm going through a spiritual attack. They think it's an attack in the spirit realm. And I said, how can me just asking questions, the basic questions that you and I should be asking, how can you call that a spiritual attack? Now, the big thing for me, being an immigrant to the United Kingdom, you know, already I don't have a huge number of friends. I don't have a huge family connection here in the UK. So the church was my community. The church was, you know, I loved the Church of England. They were good people. They were good people, and they are still good people. And someone asked me, oh, did anyone do anything to you in the church? Is that what made you leave? I said, no, the contrary is the case. The people were good. And one of the reasons why I didn't leave Christianity sooner was because of how kind and good the people at the Church of England, the church I was going to, you know, I felt like if I left, I would be betraying them. But I could not lie to myself anymore. I had to leave my truth. I didn't believe what they were saying anymore, right? So I had to leave. And leaving means, you know, just it's been very isolating. Very isolating. Because now the friends and everybody is religious. Everyone in the family is a believer in God. I went to a funeral just 3 weeks ago, and, you know, the whole family were there up in Nottingham, and, you know, it's just religious and, you know, God and all, you know. But, you know, I'm open and I'm bold and I'm saying it. I don't believe anymore, and, you know, They keep sending me videos and sending me things. Oh, God exists. You should see. You should watch this video. You should, you know.
And you watch the video and it turns out to be a complete pile of nonsense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely just a pile of nonsense. In fact, it's just ridiculous. Some of the things they send to me. It's like someone saying, you look at the trees. Therefore, God.
Oh, we like that. We're going to get t-shirts with that.
Look at the mountains. Who do you think put it there? Therefore, God. You know, those kind of videos, I'm thinking, goodness gracious.
Yeah, I don't think they realise that by sending those sort of videos, which we as atheists see as sort of nonsense, and that you can see the misguided process that those videos have gone through to get to that point of being a video and actually going out into the world. For us, when we've from our position, we look at them, we just go, that's why I'm an atheist.
Exactly.
Because of that video, that type of video.
Can I share with you very quickly? My son is 18, right? And my son, for some reason, when we would take him to church, the African church, he just never liked it, never bought into church, just never. It was never his thing. And I worried then as a Christian mom, you know, because I wasn't doing my job. I had to rope him in into religion and into, but he never bought into the religion. It just wasn't his thing. So when I finally made sense of you know, what I was doing and told my two children that I am now an atheist, you know, and I don't believe anymore. And my son said, Mom, he said, can you understand now how I felt when I would come to church with you guys and when you lot are reading the Bible and I can see, he says he just sees the adults nodding their head in agreement and he's thinking, but these stories don't make any sense. how are these people making sense of this? He said, can you understand how I feel? I said, I understand you 100%.
He sounds like a very intelligent young man.
Yes. He's alive. He's 18. He'll be 19 in a matter of days. But he's been a lifelong atheist. He just never bought into, and do you know how pleased I am that he doesn't have to go through what I went through. He hasn't got to have sleepless nights thinking of going to sleep and not waking up and meeting the judgment and going to hell. Do you know how pleased I am?
It must be so satisfying. Yes.
It is, absolutely. My younger one, he was 9 years old when he came to me. I was still a Christian. He came to me, he said, Mom, I'm not a Christian anymore. I said, why not? You know, why not? Why are you not a Christian? He said, no, I don't want to be a Christian anymore. And I asked why. He said, you know, Mom, I don't like blood. And Jesus, when Jesus died, there was plenty of blood. He said, Mom, no, I don't want to be a Christian anymore. So I asked him, do you like Christmas? He said, yes, he likes Christmas. Do you like Christmas presents? Yes. I said, where do you think those come from? It's from Christ dying.
Paganism.
At the time, I didn't know better. Yeah. You know, I said, listen, you've got to be a Christian. It's through Christ. That's how we get Christmas and Christmas presents and Santa and all these things, you know. But after I came away from that conversation, I think, to be fair, when I look back now, I actually think it was that conversation with my 9-year-old child at that time saying to me, I don't want to be a Christian because why so much blood? And if I identify as a Christian, that means he's partaking in that barbaric death. And, you know, and when I think about how young he was and how his mind was thinking. And I look back and say, but Jesus didn't really need to die. He didn't need to go through such a horrendous death for nobody. It was pointless. And to think that Christians are happy that someone had to die for they to be good people.
Yeah. But he didn't stay dead, according to the story. As I say, he had a bad weekend dead for your sins.
And came back.
Listen, guys, I think that we've sort of reached our time here, but it's been absolutely fascinating. So you've got a family here, mate. You've got a family. Yes,
I'm happy. I'm happy to hear that.
Another three friends after the day.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. Because it's been a very, very isolating. My son is an atheist, but he don't want to talk about religion. When I'm talking about my stuff, he's out of the way. No.
And in fact, actually, if we could get to a point where everybody was non-religious and didn't care about it, I think we'd actually be in a far better place as a world. But
I think for me is, you know, for people, I would never knock any religious person down. Because someone said to me, if they were not religious, they'll be out there raping, they might be a murderer, they might be stealing, they might be... And, you know, I said to them, you know, hold on to your religion.
Yeah,
you need your religion to be a decent person, you know. So people need religion. Some people need it for a comfort blanket. Some people.
But I would also go further than that, saying if they did need a religion like that to be a decent person, they're not a decent person.
They're not a decent person, yeah. That's probably the best time to end it. Guys, it's been absolutely fantastic. Don't forget to subscribe to our channel.
And subscribe.
Yes.
Yeah, and comment, because we do reply to those comments. We do take them seriously. But no trolling, please. No trolling. If you've got a serious comment to make and you want to make a point, then that's fantastic.
You know, you've just summoned every troll within 100 miles now by saying,
come to me. Anyway, listen, guys, it's been absolutely great. We'll see you next time on the next podcast, which is going to be next week. In the meantime, have a great week. Speak soon.
Bye, I'll see you soon.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining us today, and don't forget to click that like button. Also, make a comment, and of course, subscribe to the channel. We'll see you next time.